This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning, and this is The Breakfast Grill. The World Bank has estimated that the global illicit cigarette market is worth as much as 40 to 50 billion US dollars annually, with Malaysia reportedly taking top honours for this. There are studies that point to a potential loss of 5 billion ringgit in uncollected tax revenue as a result. However, aside from the loss to government coffers, should this industry, which contributes to an undeniable health risk, be more regulated? We speak to Cormac O'Rourke, the CEO of JTI Malaysia, to find out, whilst also asking how the company is doing. Thank you for joining us again. You were last here in August 2019. First, I think I'd like to bring up something which, unfortunately, we can't ignore, and that is COVID-19, because that's the black swan event. Now, I want to know how JTI sales are doing now, because I think in early stages of MCO, with the movement control order, most people were stuck at home and many of your points of sales were closed. Must have had some impact on your revenue. Has it recovered by now?
The first half of the year, if you look at Jan to June, the industry was down about 10% versus the previous year. And I think it's important that we understand that's already off an artificially low base owing to illegal trade. Since our MCO has been imposed, volumes are improving as outlets open up. The big challenge faced by the industry during the MCO was, I guess, a confusion on the ground when it came to what should be delivered at a retail outlet versus not. And this caused us great concern and great difficulties during that period. And certainly, I think it was a boon for the illegal cigarette traders, as many shops really struggled with getting consistency of supply. But in the second half of the year, we're seeing certainly a recovery as stores are reopening. Now, mind you, the borders are still closed. And if you look at JB, for example, with the closure of the border in Singapore, volumes there continue to suffer.
Yeah, but overall, have you had to adjust your distribution strategy as a result? And also looking at the fact that there exists a smoking ban in all eateries, right? So sales must be slower in that channel. So overall, has JTI had to kind of look at how best to reach the customer?
Yeah, particularly during the MCO period, we had to find new ways to distribute our product. We found that we had capacity issues in our existing supply chain, and therefore we had to engage extra providers, if you like, to continue our supply to retail. But we managed to overcome that. The lesson I think that we should learn coming through this, not just for the tobacco industry, but for the fast-moving consumer goods sector, and I guess what we would remind government now is, should we face another movement control order, such as the one we faced, we need to apply the lessons learned. There was a process of application for many companies through the Ministry of International Trade, and I think that process was very challenging. So going forward, what we would say is, if we must have another MCO, we need to protect the integrity of the supply chains. And what we would say, particularly when it comes to retail and grocery, is that we should use the Consumer Pricing Index, the basket of goods, that they would be the goods that should be always available to consumers at retail level. When it comes to the overall volumes, if you like, owing to people being stuck at home, we saw that generally people, when they went out to shop, were stocking up more. And they were certainly shifting from channels, as many of the eateries, for example, were closed. Moments of consumption were reduced as night entertainment outlets weren't available. So people definitely changed their consumption patterns, and volume certainly was impacted for the first part of the year.
Now, I want to look at JTI's results, and you delisted from Bursa some time ago. So unfortunately, I only have counts from the Companies Commission of Malaysia, and that's only for 2019. So from what I can see there, revenue is flat for 2019 at 1.16 billion versus 1.18 billion in 2018. But I did see a noticeable drop in profit. So it was only 36 million for last year versus 58 million in 2018. Can I know what's the reason for this decline?
I mean, the big reason, obviously, is while volumes have stabilised because the legitimate industry have introduced value brand propositions. So volume has stabilised, slightly improved, if you will, but overall profits are reduced. And the reason is, if you think about a packet of cigarettes, 8 ringgit is a specific excise tax and 1 more ringgit is SST. So that's 9 ringgit from 11.90 is going to the government. So 75% of every pack goes to the government. And this is before you share margins with the retailers and before you cover your cost of production and your various investments. So this is what's driving the decline in the legitimate industry profits. First was, since 2015, the dramatic decline in volumes. But now, as volumes are stabilising, you're seeing more downtrading from consumers who are under pressure. And because of that, then the margins available for the lower price brands simply cannot match up to those which we previously sold. So this is what's really driving the bottom line declines in profit.
But this switch towards the value for money segment, is it something only you are facing, JTI is facing versus like BAT? Is it due to the brands perhaps that just people don't want to smoke anymore?
No, I think what you see is both PMI and BAT both have value brands. So the total industry is facing this downtrading into value brands. In fact, JTI is the only company this year who are growing share of combustible, so of ready-made cigarettes. I would estimate that by the year end, our share of the legitimate market will have grown by close to 4% versus last year. So we are growing this year, but the issue from a profitability standpoint is the volume we're growing is essentially negative. Because we've introduced low price brands for consumers not to downtrade any further into the illegal space. And our strategy is simple. We must put a floor in the market. The market size cannot get any smaller. And over time, as affordability for legitimate products continues to improve, because there's no tax increases, then eventually we will be able to get some pricing power back in that part of the market, which hopefully will restore profitability.
And with COVID-19 and I think the ongoing recession Malaysia faces, you don't see any improvement in terms of people, you know, staying in this value for money segment, I suppose.
Well, that's the plan. I think is we would hope that people will stay in the value for money segment. I think it's important, and it's something that the legitimate tobacco industry is trying to address at the moment, to inform consumers of the damaging impact of the black economy in Malaysia. As I'm sure you well know, it's estimated to be around 300 billion annually, of which tobacco is about 5 billion. And it's not a victimless crime. While probably people don't have too much sympathy for the legitimate tobacco industry, retailers, of which there's 60,000 out there, rely, some of them, up to 30% of their revenues come from trading of legitimate tobacco products. And they're now feeling the pinch because not just have volumes declined, what you're seeing is that the margins are now getting squeezed as well. So, you know, for Malaysian consumers out there, we would encourage you to consider that and to purchase legal brands as opposed to illegitimate ones, because the majority of Malaysian consumers who smoke are, of course, purchasing illegal cigarettes.
Now, that's something perhaps beyond your control.
Sure.
But what is cost? So I want to know, is there more cost rationalization expected on your end? Your competitor with the biggest market share, BAT, they have cut their overhead and fixed expenses by as much as, 20% year on year in the first half. Is that something you're also pursuing at JTI?
Sure. We have been doing this now since, I guess, late 2017. We've needed to. So back in 2019, last year, just probably after I was here, we announced that we are reducing the size of our workforce by 40% over a 2-year period. So we are going through that process at the moment. And of course, we're looking at investments across the board. As I've said, the margin impact from down trading is severe, and it does reduce our ability to invest even with our trade partners. So we have been on, I guess, a journey of rationalization for over 2 years now. And that will continue to a point where I think we'll have reached the core, if you like, where we cannot rationalize anymore, which is why it's so important that.
How far away are you from that, though?
I would say probably a year.
Because if I look at BAT, right, and look at their numbers because they're listed, they have net profit margins of 10% for quarter two this year.
Yeah.
And while it may not be a fair comparison, because I only have your 2019 numbers, and that's for a whole year, it's still around 3% for 2019. So is it just down to economies of scale for them or the sales mix, which, you know, results in them having a higher margin versus JTI?
Yeah, exactly. What you'll see from what we observe in the market is that BAT volumes, they're still about 50% of the market, number one. So they have scale. But the other is that more of their volumes remain premium margins. By this year, 45% of our volume for 2020 will be in value brands, which is essentially loss making. So less of our volume is profitable. But our strategy is that we want to grow the legitimate market. And in the longer term, by working with government where there's no further tax increases, we will improve affordability. And once you do that and you get some action taken against the illegal cigarette trade, you will be able to look at restoring margins. But up until this point, with the state of the illegal cigarette business, there's simply no space to take pricing in this market. So therefore, the margins are going to continue to be pressured.
And let's talk about market share, because you brought that up, because you said BAT is largest. I mean, we know that it's 50%, I think slightly above that. What is your market share versus, let's say, Philip Morris? How do you divide the balance of the market?
So the way we calculate our market share is we look at combustible cigarettes. And our read of market share at the moment, year to date, is about 30% of the market. We would therefore see PMI at about 18% and BAT at 50%. And we are the only company to actually grow share of market this year versus last year in combustible cigarettes.
So this excludes the heat to burn segment?
This excludes heated tobacco. So heated tobacco is, you know, is a relatively new category, which JTI currently don't have any offerings in the Malaysian market. If you look at the size of heated tobacco in Malaysia, it's still quite small. It's about 1.8% of the consumed market. Its focus is in the larger urban centres, particularly
KL. Yeah, but why aren't you all participating? Don't you want to be part of this? Because many industry observers say this is the growing part of the segment, right?
Yes, I think it's a matter of timing. I think if you look at the Malaysian consumer, particularly in the reduced risk category, the vast bulk of them are consuming vaping products. And the issue with vaping products for the legitimate tobacco company is we're not able to access that part of the market because nicotine is controlled under the Poisons Act 1952, which means essentially it's illegal. You can only be approved by the MPRA, the National Pharmaceutical Regulatory Authority, to obtain an import and distribution license. We have tried, we have applied through the MPRA and have not been successful. So the
e-vaping, but the other two companies have?
No, because e-vaping is quite different to heated tobacco.
Okay.
So this is the liquids. And these liquids are, if they're containing nicotine, from which our studies would say over 95% are all illegal, unregulated and untaxed in Malaysia. And this then has a, let's say, an impact on not just combustible tobacco, but also the growth potential for heated tobacco. Because heated tobacco, of course, is governed under the CTPR, which is the tobacco regulation. So therefore, it has standards and requirements it must adhere to, where the e-vapor part of the business adheres to none whatsoever. So their pricing, of course, can be sharp. When it comes to contents, it can be whatever, frankly. So it's very difficult to compete in the reduced risk product space in that environment.
Yeah, which begs the question, right? Why is this segment not regulated at all? I mean, I think the previous administration, the previous government did make some overtures with regards to that. But do you know what the current position is on this?
It's gone remarkably quiet. Back in January, under the previous administration, we were led to believe that new regulations for reduced risk products were imminent. We had been campaigning for those for quite a number of years. We had submitted proposed regulatory frameworks, which we believe could work for Malaysia. We had made, you know, several engagements with government on it, but still nothing. Which is quite fascinating, because we would estimate that the, let's say, the vaping space is worth about 2 billion ringgit annually. And it's obviously a missed revenue collection for the government as well.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning, Cormac O'Rourke, CEO of JTI Malaysia. When we come back, we're going to talk about the illicit cigarette market in detail. And is this industry a sunset one? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. This morning in the hot seat is Cormac O'Rourke, the CEO of JTI Malaysia. Just a moment ago, we talked about the challenging operating environment and were they or are they losing market share? Now, I want to talk about illicit cigarettes because we've always been cited as an example where the level is the highest in the world, I think some estimates at 60%. Why do you think this is the case?
At the moment, we're tracking it at about 65% in August. It's number one in the world. And there's a couple of factors which I think we need to bear in mind here. One is affordability. So leading up to 2015, 2013, 14, 15, what you saw was dramatic tax increases. Specifically in 2015, when you saw a close to 40% increase in the excise on tobacco products. And this then shot Malaysia from about 35% illegal trade to where we are today, 65%. It made in 2015, it meant that Malaysia was the least affordable in the world for consumers to purchase legitimate tobacco products. So that's, I think, one of the driving forces is what we would say in a way was ill-conceived taxation policy. The other then, of course, is due to lax enforcement. And frankly, when you get to number one in the world for the trading of illegal cigarettes, and when you get to the type of size and scale, it's clear that it's not a cottage industry, let's put it this way. It's organised by large criminal gangs, syndicates who are in charge of this, who have managed to infiltrate and corrupt agencies of the state in so doing. So in short, taxation is one, a driver over taxation. And then, of course, coupled with weak enforcement, allows it to blossom.
So you do agree with the recent World Bank report, which is Confronting Illicit Tobacco Trade, a global review of country experiences, which is, I think, issued in 2019. So it's not just solely high taxes that contribute to this high level of illicit in terms of, like, it's more complicated than that.
It sure is. What you've seen since 2015, because there has been an excise increase moratorium, affordability is actually improving now year on year for Malaysian consumers. So what we do is we take the weighted average price of a pack of legal cigarettes, and then we look at the disposable income of the country in question, and that arrives at an affordability number. The higher that number is, the less affordable the legitimate tobacco product is. So since 2015, because there has been no further tax increases and because the legitimate tobacco manufacturers have introduced value brands, cigarettes are becoming actually more affordable. We're probably back at 2007 levels for affordability. So what that tells you is that, yes, in the first instance, hyper-taxation brought us here. But if you do not have strong enough enforcement, once the problem becomes this size, you will never get to grips with this problem.
But if I look at the report and I'm reading from page 10 of it, I quote, you know, the tobacco industry regularly overstates levels and changes in the tobacco illicit trade to oppose tobacco tax reform. So in other words, you continuously bring home that message that it's due to high taxes. It's a form of lobbying, isn't it, on your part?
No, not at all. We conduct a study three times annually in Malaysia with Nielsen. It's called the Illegal Cigarette Study, which we publish three times, and our methodology is there. And basically what we do is we do a pack collection survey. So people go to the market, they collect thousands upon thousands of packs, and we do a sample. What is the percentage illegal versus illegal?
But you pay for these surveys.
Sure, we do. And we open our methodology to government. We publish our methodology and we make available our findings. And I think no one has really disputed our numbers, in fact, in Malaysia.
And so you would say that your methodology is sound?
We're very confident in our methodology. In fact, you know, I would invite anyone, which is what I do sometimes to get my, feel of the marketplace, just to walk around and have a look at empty cigarette packs on the ground. And you will find, actually, it stacks up very well. You will find mostly illegal cigarettes on the ground.
Because another accusation is from this Global Centre for Good Governance in Tobacco Control. So they say this is a form of lobbying to influence policy. And I somewhat agree with that. I mean, what would you say to that, though?
I think the problem in Malaysia is very real. The reality is the government are losing 5 billion ringgit annually from the illegal cigarette trading. And I think it's important that people understand illegal cigarette trading is not just damaging to the legitimate tobacco industry. To SMEs, particularly retailers, of which there's 60,000 in Malaysia, it's very damaging. It's damaging to government coffers. And of course, from a rule of law point of view, it's very, very damaging to have an illegal or a black market the size of what we have in Malaysia, 300 billion. So it's a very real issue. And those who may call it lobbying, well, I'm not sure what I can say to them, but to look at the actual numbers, and the numbers don't lie, they speak for themselves.
And you cited weak enforcement as a result, you know, resulting in this high level of illicit cigarettes. So have you had any interaction with this new government? I mean, before that, there was talk of a task force. Is there one now?
Yeah, so in the previous administration, we had spent quite some time advocating for a multi-agency task force to be established to combat this problem. And what we wanted to see was policing, customs, Domestic Trade, Ministry of International Trade, the National Financial Crime Centre, as well as the MACC, come together under an independent head to lead a task force to really tackle this problem.
Any progress there, though?
In January, it was called to convene under Guan Eng, and of course, then we had a change in administration. And since then, we have, under the new Minister of Finance, we have just seen it being re-established. And about, I think, a month, maybe 6 weeks ago, we had another kickoff meeting of the multi-agency task force. And where we stand now is really agreeing the terms of reference of what this task force should do. We believe that the task force needs to have strong KPIs in place in order to see some action being taken. But in my engagements with, for example, police, with domestic trade, with Ministry of International Trade, they all see the size and scale of the problem. And in fact, if you talk to domestic trade, if you talk to police, they will echo our sentiments when it comes to the illegal trade in Malaysia. They're aware of the scale of the problem. I do believe more needs to be done at customs level, and I think that's understood. And I'm very confident that under this new multi-agency task force, if it's given the proper commitment, it can be the vehicle to put cigarette smuggling to bed for once and for all in Malaysia. But it will require a concerted effort and great political will from the Minister for Finance.
Now, the other issue is that, you know, some opponents of big tobacco argue that the companies themselves, so the likes of BAT, Philip Morris and JTI, they're actually contributing to the availability of these illicit cigarettes, you know. So what are controls do you have over your supply chain? Because, yes, these cigarettes could be made by JTI, but just in another country and smuggled into Malaysia, unfortunately.
Sure. In Malaysia, the illegal cigarette problem is not one where you see non-duty paid legitimate tobacco products from manufacturers such as us coming into the market. The vast, vast bulk is actually contraband. So it's not our brands at all. But more generally, globally, JTI is committed to the fight against illegal trade. We work, for example, in the European Union very closely with the European Anti-Fraud Office, OLAF. We have agreements in place. And we have what we call legitimate market demand models to ensure that what we supply into any country is specifically for the demand in that country. We have a team, an anti-illicit trade team, who works globally on helping governments, on training, on policy making and enforcement. So we're very committed to the fight against illegal cigarette trading, not just in Malaysia, but all over the world. Because, of course, net-net, the impact is terrible for us. So there's no good basis for the comments that the tobacco industry are somehow in favour of this or are not doing enough.
And we all know Budget 2021 is going to be tabled very, very soon, probably the first week of November. So what are your expectations there? Do you think that tobacco taxes will be raised?
No, I don't think so, because I think the government understand very well at this stage that you put up the taxes and actually you just fuel the black market and you lose more tax revenue.
Now, the last point I want to ask is about the tobacco industry as a whole, right? Because I think if we see some of the data coming out of the more developed markets, there has been a decline in the number of smokers. I think the only growing markets are, of course, the emerging markets, developing countries. So do you think, especially for Malaysia, where our population is just hovering around 32 million, we aren't seeing spectacular population growth, the cigarette industry here is a sunset one, especially as regulations is set to increase. Is this the end of the good times for JTI?
I think what you see, like most other mature markets, and Malaysia is no exception, that people become more health conscious and you're seeing less people smoking combustible tobacco in Malaysia. I think that trend will continue. So volumes will continue to get smaller. For us, in a case like Malaysia, where 65% of the industry is not accessible, it certainly would mean that we're playing into a tiny, tiny part. But at the moment, adult consumers continue to, you know, many of them want to smoke cigarettes, and we support that freedom of choice to do so. But without a doubt, the industry is going through accelerated change at the moment. So I do see the industry changing.
So there will never be a point where JTI withdraws from Malaysia?
I would hope not. I mean, the issue we have is one of sustainability owing to the reduced scale because of the illegal cigarette business. That's clearly has had huge pressures on our business for, you know, the last number of years, particularly since 2015, which has reduced our ability to be able to invest in Malaysia. Our hope would be that we can get to grips with that under the new multi-agency task force and remain in business here.
On that note, thank you for your time. On The Breakfast Grill this morning was Cormac Aruk, CEO of JTI Malaysia. I'm Wong Xiaoning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.